Mike Jai White, how's it going, mate?
It's good. Good to see you, little bro.
Thanks for doing this.
Hey, my pleasure. It's long overdue.
So listen, Mike, I'm going to get straight into it.
Yes.
Can you just tell the audience what your martial arts background is?
Okay, well, my martial arts background, I started with...
I know it's a lot, but we've got about...
Yeah, yeah, I don't want to get bored. I don't want to bore everybody. But interestingly enough, it was Japanese jiu-jitsu that I started with. Then Shotokan, Kyokushin, Goju, Taekwondo, Tangsudo. Then I got into the weapon system, Kobudo, then totally like trained with Eric Chen, with Wushu and everything. So it's a bunch of different stuff.
Let me rephrase the question. Is there any martial art that you haven't practiced? What would you say your main martial art is?
It's got to be Kyokushin. That's where my heart is. Not because of the beauty of it, but what it pulls out of you. I always compare it to, like, I always say it's like the Navy SEALs of martial arts, because when you're tested, when you really want to, you know, if something tests you to where you feel like, no, this is not worth it, I want to quit, it really develops something from your character, right?
Yeah.
And that's something that, like, if you develop that, you know, walking through the fire type of thing, that helps your life so much, because there's nothing that you can't overcome. So that's why I love it so much, because it keeps testing you. And that's why I still test in that system, because it's still hard as hell. You know, like couple of Octobers ago, I tested again.
I saw this. You said a little video. You were somewhere and you were taking your what Dan? Which Dan was it?
Yeah, it was like a third and fourth Dan test.
Yeah.
But it's like, it doesn't care that I'm an actor or famous or whatever. Actually, it was rougher on me. We were training like 8 hours a day. You only got a little, it's like hard military training, and you got just a little bit of time to get food. And then you're running up mountains, you're doing all kinds of stuff. But like, we would finish working out, and then people wanted to take pictures with me. And I'm like the last one leaving the training area. Now I got less time to eat. We got to get back.
I'm tired. Like, leave me alone.
Yeah, but you couldn't do that.
I don't
want
to come across as an asshole.
Yeah, because there's people from Russia, you know, Brazil, all of, and
where
you
did
know,
you do this? What country did you do this in?
Well, I did it in Canada, in Banff.
All right.
Man, dude, I feel like, damn, this ain't worth it. Like, you know, you have like the fight like all day, something like a 30 man, and people are trying to knock your ass out.
To be honest, I mean, I know we're all martial artists and everything, and you'd want to think that this isn't the case, but I suppose a little bit, you may have a little bit of a bullseye on your back because you've done these martial arts films. Oh, it's Michael Jai White.
Absolutely.
I want to see how I do with him.
Yeah, so so I can say, woe is me, it's rougher on me and all that, but that's all a part of it. You know what I mean? Instead of, like, but that's the thing that it taught me. It's like, because I wanted to make excuses several times. Like, this ain't fair. But that's, life ain't fair. You know what I mean?
That's my trailer.
Yeah, exactly.
Where's my Winnebago?
But that's great. But that's great for me. I probably benefited better than anybody because I had to be better, you know? And I had to not complain, even though I was like basically by myself. And I was the dancing panda because every now and then, like we were trying to eat and people want to take pictures, you know what I'm going to, what am I going to do? But guess what? I pay for this. So shut up, Mike. That's what you get. You know what I mean? That's what you get for being, you know, the movie guy. So that's the thing in life. That's why I love it so much, because, hey, man, it teaches you that life ain't fair. Like, you roll with it. I can overcome that. You know what I mean? But there's a part of me that wanted to say, man, this ain't fair. But then it's like, shut the hell up and get it done. You know, so I'm better by going through it. That's the thing that I feel like a lot of people lost in martial arts.
It's physically taxing, isn't it? It's physically very hard, but
yeah,
you know, we know that's a mental game. People just
physically difficult.
How do you do that? Well, you know, it's here, isn't it? And that is what sets you up for life, when you can get strong here.
Yeah, and so you apply that to, like, look at you. I mean, you are a martial artist. Like, the how hard you have to work through your movies, people have no idea. You make it look easy. this is a trip, right? You make it look easy, but it ain't easy. That's the beauty of it. But you're like the fight scenes that you have to go through, and I go, man, because when I saw Avengement, I'm like, shit, that's my favorite Scott Atkins thing. What you did on that, like, it's like, I was like, because I know the behind the scenes.
It might not be fourth down training tough, but it's still tough.
No, it's tough because I really think there's times on set that I've had to really dig down. I mean, I had to do this fight with Josh Barnett in Never Back Down 3. Yeah. It was 120 degrees. And I changed I found a warehouse that was just abandoned. It was like garbage and rat poop all over the place. We changed it and made it into the gym. We didn't have air conditioning in that damn thing. And even if we did, well, hell, you can't use it while you're shooting. So under hot lights, I'm fighting against a guy, you know, UFC champion, Strikeforce heavyweight champion. We're going full blast. And I'm under these hot-ass lights, and it's already 120 degrees.
It was the opposite in Bulgaria on Undisputed 2.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, when we were up in Fratza.
Yes, in that freezing cold studio, but we're supposed to be sweaty, and they're spraying cold water on us. And we're both cold anyway.
That's the coldest I've ever been in my life.
Worse for you, because you were doing it all in the snow and all those acting scenes in the snow.
Yeah, but you know, but that's the thing, man. It's like, it's worth it, you know.
You never know when it's going to creep up and get you, because the last film I did was Debt Collectors, and I was in Los Angeles in the Valley. Yeah. It was August going into September, and it kind of creeps up on you over there. I mean, obviously it's really hot, but I feel like I've filmed in hotter places. But before I knew it, I was suffering from dehydration. I had to be took back to my trailer. We had to stop filming the fight scene with the Lewis Mandalore. And they got someone to come and put me on a drip, and I had two bags of saline put into me. And, you know, as soon as I had that in me, it was back out on set. Come on, we've got to finish the fight. But I was in a bad way. But, you know, you've got to get it done.
Down three, same thing happened. I got deathly ill. Forget it. Like the scene with Josh Barnett, he's done. He's wiped out. Guess what? I'm the director. I got to stay. So
your brain's not working. What's the shot?
I got so sick, I had to go be rushed to the hospital. They put IVs on me in my room. I would basically be wheeled out and just go, can't put the camera there, whatever. Dude, the fight scene, this makes me think about like putting the outtakes out of this. When I had to fight Nate Jones,
yeah,
I was so sick that before I would just do the take, and right after cut, I just would just be out of it. So when I saw the actual stuff, I didn't remember shooting it because I was out. There's a time where I'm walking down this hallway.
Were you happy with what you shot?
I was surprised. I guess I mustered up the energy that you couldn't tell. But there was a whole day where I don't remember anything. I was like,
well, I have this thing that I always say, and it sums it up for me. I always say to people, it seemed like a good idea when I was 12. You know, when I was watching Bloodsport, and I said, Mummy, I want to be an action star. It seemed like a good idea back then. But yeah, it's tough, man. It's hard.
But yeah, man, because now we do, like, you know, we can't compare ourselves as Jackie Chan. Jackie Chan and Donnie Yen, man, they could shoot a fight scene and take a whole week to shoot a fight scene. Now the audience doesn't know the difference. Now we have to do that same, like a fight scene of that length. We have to do that in a matter of 4 hours, 4 to 6 hours sometimes.
Yeah, they have luxury in Hong Kong, China, where, to be honest, if you're feeling a bit stiff on day three, just take it easy on day three. We'll pick it up on day four because we've got five, six, seven, and eight.
Yeah, but you know, there's no disclaimer. We can't explain that to our audience. But we have to we have to make up the difference on a very short period of time. So, I mean, I don't, you know, you, I mean, I was jealous, man. you were telling me about, you know, when you're shooting with Donnie and just like
7 days for our end fight in Hitman 4.
Oh my God.
I wanted to go longer, actually. I wanted to go longer because I figured, well, I'm here, I'm doing it. It's Yun Wei Ping, Donnie Yen. Come on, let's make it a good one.
That's one of those things, man. But we have to suck it up and go, okay, there's no excuses here. We still have to, you know, it just makes us better. We have to do what the audience expects on a very short and limited time period. And most of the time, even the director doesn't understand what the hell's going on.
Let me ask you this then. Let me ask you this. If you're making a movie with a director that maybe you've not worked with before, and, you know, maybe it's not a fully fledged action movie, but there's some action in it and you're required to do it. And so you start doing the action and it becomes clear to you that maybe the director's never shot an action scene before and he doesn't necessarily understand how to do it the way that you know how to do it because you've done so many action films.
Right.
Will you at that point say, listen, I think I need to take over here? Or will you be a bit more
critical? I've had to because they don't understand the language and they don't, you know, most people are not going to admit that they don't, that they're limited in some place, especially if they're the director.
Yeah.
But since, you know, I've never been known as an asshole, I always can understand somebody else's perspective. Now is a point where I'm going to use my asshole card for that.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to put my foot down and say, look.
The expectation is there that you have to deliver with the action, the audience.
Yeah, there's so many things that we've done where I know myself, like where the previs look better than the actual movie itself.
Yeah.
And the previs, for people who don't know, is like we will shoot it on a you know, a camera phone or whatever, just to show how the scene moves. And so hopefully the director can understand that that's the way this should be shot. And because we design it for these shots. So a lot of directors think that, you know, they don't understand. There's a language that we've learned of choreography and filming that the whole action world understands. And that's what you want to go by. And if they're smart, they will listen and go by that.
Yeah, you don't want to be the asshole on set arguing. Yeah. And I've been in that place before where I've had to be the asshole because, you know, I know it. For me, it's my the way I've always looked at it is I'm known for my action. I have to make sure that that is as good as it can possibly be. Yes, I hope the action's great and the story, but the action, it has to be good. And if you're making it that the action is not looking up to my standards, I have to get in there and make sure. But now I've learned to have that conversation at the beginning before we shoot the movie, you know?
Doesn't it break your heart? We've seen some of the best action guys in the world be used completely wrong. Okay. We've seen Hollywood try to do the thing that you know, Jet Li luckily had the right people, choreographers and shooting whatever when he came in with Lethal Weapon.
Yes.
They've tried to emulate this with Tony Jaa and Ico. Terribly, like remember when they were trying to do what was it? There was a, you know, Romeo Must Die, and there was a few other things where they would shoot a downward angle on Jet Li, making him look smaller, and they cut up his, they don't understand. His movement is amazing. You don't cut away from that. You don't treat him like somebody who doesn't know how to do it. It's just, you got to do the Fred Astaire thing. You shoot the beauty of him moving, like Bruce Lee. Like, nobody moves like that. But they took Ico in what, Mile 22?
Yeah, they shaky cammed him up.
Oh my God, I'm like, wait a minute, you got one of the best choreographers and movers on the planet.
Well, Ico's such a nice guy. Ico, because we work with him, he's so nice, and he will do whoever, you know, whatever you want. But really, he needs to stick his foot down and say, no, this is not the way to do it.
You've cut up Fred Astaire, basically, and you've cut to his feet, and you cut to all. Yeah. You've chopped it all up. Then what do you got? It's like they'll never understand. They blame poor Eco or Tony for the movie not kind of working.
Brett Ratner, he had it right, because obviously Jackie Chan came over and he did Cannonball Run, he did The Protector, and yes. He didn't shoot it the way that he would shoot it himself. And
right,
you know, he played the Hollywood game and okay, I'll do it your guys' way. It's the wrong way, and he didn't take off. But Brett Ratner with Rush Hour, he said, Jackie, the fights, they're yours. Bring your team. You shoot the action.
That's right.
Everything else. And, you know.
That's just smart because, he knows that he can't do that. That is an art form. Yeah, that's why I did movies in China. I went there as for learning. You know what I mean? I wanted to know how they do. And, you know, I know yourself. I mean, Jackie is a master at this. We have to learn how to kind of bridge the gap, even though we have a lot less time and money to shoot the thing. Now I get to a point where it's like, there's a camera that shouldn't be there. I'm like, no, shut that camera down because someone uses it.
Because you don't want that footage in with the editor, because an editor likes to edit.
Yes.
Those camera angles in, even when they don't really need to be there. Not everyone does, but, you know.
Like, I think about it. I try to explain it, and I try not to talk down, but when I explain just a simple edit, and we think about what is the most, think about Indiana Jones, right? One of the most iconic moments in that whole movie is when the guy brings out the scimitar, and he's got this sword, the big guy.
Yeah.
And in the same shot, Harrison Ford turns, shoots the guy, and then goes on about his business, right? Beautiful. It's beautiful. If you cut to a close shot of that guy getting shot, it's not the same moment at all.
Yeah.
You know? And I try to explain that to people, like, no, we want him to hear the guy, see him, shoot him, in the same shot and move on. That's the beauty of it.
That's the beauty of it. It was Sergio Leone. Apparently, in the Westerns before him, they would show the guy shoot the gun and then they would cut to the guy getting shot.
Right.
In America, you could never show the gun and the guy getting shot in the same frame because it was considered way too violent. But he broke that rule because he was in Italy and he didn't know, and everyone loved it because, yes, it's very violent, but it looked fantastic. And it's the same principle for a fight sequence. When you see me throw the punch in all its glory and you see the other guy get hit in the same shot and it looks like it hit him, that's the beauty of the shot. That's what you want to show.
But if you explain it to somebody, like the Indiana Jones thing, okay, you say to a director, hey, let's use that shot, right? Our editor is going to go, oh, here's a close shot of the guy getting shot. And a horrible editor would show the bullet wound and then the guy falling in a separate shot. But how do you convince him? How do you convince him that he's not right? Because he's going to go, to some degree, he's going to be right? If you show him getting shot, it makes sense, but it's nowhere near as powerful.
Not as beautiful. It's not as powerful.
Exactly.
It's not as cinematic.
Yeah. And so we gotta be assholes for our audience, man. You know, I hate to be apologizing, going, hey guys, you know, sorry that you know this is not up to par. You know, you can't do that. You can't put a disclaimer out. So we got to just put our foot down because, hey, damn it, you're hiring us. You're working with us because we've proven we know what we're doing. You know, so who's going to be blamed, me or you? It's going to be us, you know?
Yeah.
So
They'll always blame the guy whose face is on the front cover.
Exactly.
It's your fault for everything wrong with the movie.
Exactly.
Oh, did you see that Michael Jai White film?
Right.
Up to standards.
Yeah. The reason why the Hong Kong films have worked for so long is there's two directors. People don't realize this. It's two directors. There is the director And then there's the action director. When the action is happening, the regular director goes the hell home. You know, and that's why they work.
Oh, well, a smart director does that anyway.
Yeah,
like collaboration. So,
yeah, Yin Wu Ping. People don't realize that Yin Wu Ping, even though he's gotten credited to be one of the best directors, they don't realize he was the action director in those movies that became famous.
Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, directed by Ang Lee,
Oscar-winning
director, incredible. Yeah. Brilliant director.
Yes.
Himself said in an interview, he tried to tell Master Yuan Wu-Ping he thought something should be done differently for whatever reason. Uh-huh. And then he realized that he was wrong. And when it comes to action, you know, Yuan Wu-Ping, he was the man. And
yeah,
look how amazing the action is in that film.
Yeah.
People floating on bamboo trees, of course. But
yeah.
So I'm going to play you a video next. Now, I found a little surprise. Well, it's not a surprise to you. It was a surprise to me. But tell me about this, Mike.
That's me and Mills Allen Stewart. That's got to be 90, 92. Yeah, like 92. It was like one of the first things I did when I came to L.A. That's, you know, Boo Boo Stewart.
I don't know, but that's a good move
like,
there.
Like a Disney, he's like a Disney heartthrob. That's his dad. Mills.
I think I worked with him in Debt Collectors. I think he was the guy behind the bar.
Yeah, he's a stunt coordinator and he's a good friend.
But what's going on here, Mike? How come you're just taking it?
Yeah, I this is like...
Did you forget that you had an arm to punch him for 5 seconds?
Yeah, this is like early on where... I took this job because I needed rent money.
Look at this.
Yeah, I barely spoke in this damn thing. This is just like a C movie, basically.
We've all made the odd C movie.
Yeah, absolutely. Man, you messed me up with that one because I forgot.
Listen, when I was a kid, I used to watch all the 90s. Low-budget martial arts action movies. I used to love them as a kid. Even the bad ones, do you know what I mean? I lapped it up.
Yeah.
So there's always a place for this stuff. But that, I think I can say, was shockingly bad.
Yeah,
are you dead there or not? No, you're just getting back up.
Yeah, I get up like with no problem. And yeah, I'm supposed to have been like playing possum until they start, you know, betting. You know, wow, that was a great edit. And just
the old pot's full of fluff. That's ballistic. I'd not seen that before, and I know that you did. So you did the Toxic Avenger. Was that ballistic? Because you look a lot smaller there. You're still built, but you didn't have the muscle mass that you had, obviously later on in life. So was that before Toxic Avenger or after?
Oh, that's after. Now, Toxic Avenger was in the late 80s. Here's Toxic Avenger, the first thing I've ever done.
Now, these are some good nunchuck skills, I've got to say.
Let me tell you, I was supposed to be an extra on that movie. I turned out, just because opening my mouth and making suggestions, I ended up choreographing all the fight scenes practically. I played a headless dancer. I actually doubled Toxic Avenger a few times.
Oh, yeah?
I mean, I think I was like freaking 19 in this thing.
Well, you look bigger here than in the ballistic, which is what confused me. You must have dropped a lot of weight.
Yeah, I would go up and down in weight. Really, when I came to L.A., I was really trying to, you know, my whole thing was focusing on real acting work. So I'm going out to play, you know, accountants or whatever, but not the bench pressing accountant. I'm trying to play regular roles. So I always tried to trim down. Even to this day, whenever I work is I go lighter. You know,
it's the same for me, of course.
Yeah, except for when we first
Well, what I mean is when I bulked up, obviously, to play Boyka, and the reason I wanted to bulk up as much as I possibly could was because of you. But, you know, people seeing me as that character, that was the first time most people saw me. And you know, fans, they're disappointed when they see me not like that. But, of course, I don't just want to play Boyka. I want to play other roles. I want to be a normal actor.
Absolutely. You bulk up, you know, the focus that you had. I watched you just change all of a sudden. Like, you know, you one thing that was really funny, because I know, see, one trick that we have is like we pump up before.
Oh, yeah.
Before, you know, the camera rolls. And there was a few times where you'd be doing push-ups in the ring, and then I start doing push-ups. You're like, Mike, don't do this. We got to keep the illusion that I'm closer to your side.
Exactly. What was great was when I got there, and the whole agreement was, listen, I'm trying to get as big as I can.
Yeah.
Because we wanted to look the same height, the same weight, as much as was possible. I mean, that was the goal. And you were shrinking down in weight as the movie went on. Yeah. I could see you literally getting tighter and tighter and tighter.
Yeah, yeah. I was trimming down while you were bulking up.
Yeah.
So we would meet in the middle. But the thing is, because basically what we did was the Rocky Apollo Creed thing. Because that's almost the same ratio. Sylvester Stallone and...
Carl Weathers.
Yeah, Carl Weathers.
Yeah.
Carl Weathers was way bigger, like height-wise and width-wise.
Yeah.
They did certain things where if you... The first time you see them, they seem closer to the same size. The illusion is there.
Yes.
And that's what we did. When you and I met up and we had you slightly taller, everybody was convinced.
Yeah.
And but you had the jacket on.
Some people are still convinced.
Yeah. Remember? Oh, the funny thing was, remember when I came to England to that big martial art convention?
Oh, yeah.
And you were with me? Yeah. And they were like, oh, man, I loved you in Undisputed.
Yeah. And they were, that film was great. I'm standing right next to you.
Yeah, you're standing right next to me. And they're like, hey, would you take a picture of us? And I'm like, you like that movie, right?
I'm like, okay.
I said, you just gave the camera to Boyka. And they're like, no. I'm like, no, that's him. And they freaked out because you're so night and day, because you're such a pleasant, non-threatening person in person. I mean, I'm not, you know, not trying to insult you, but that's a positive thing.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. But then you inhabited this character that people are thinking is damn near like computer generated.
The lengths we went to, I had shoes with about this much on the bottom of my foot to give me height. We would Dutch the camera sometimes so that our heads look level in the ring, because obviously we didn't have, I didn't have shoes on sometimes. Well, in the ring, we didn't have boots on. But and then sometimes I'd be on a box. And
you gained and you stayed lean. That was the most jungle. Important thing, because I love that picture that we used where I'm profile and you're square, like you open up to camera. That picture made us look around the same size.
Yeah.
Because there was my profile, you only see the side of my side of me. And but you see, you turn toward, you know, kind of full frame toward camera, and it just is such a great shot because we look similar in size. Because
it's amazing that we were able to pull that off, to be honest.
And then while we're moving, people already have it in their head that we're the same size.
Yeah.
So
you're right. It was that initial first time when I was even taller than you.
Yes. Yeah.
People are like, wow, this guy's big.
Yeah. And then so to be that size moving around the way you did was otherworldly, you know? People are like, who the hell is that dude, you know?
Now, let me ask you something.
Yeah.
Honestly. Mm-hmm. When you knew that I was going to play Yuri Boyka, which was written in the script as this, you know, sort of Ivan Drago beast character, what did you think when Isaac said, okay, we're going to get Scott to play this guy?
Because Dolph had already, they were trying to negotiate it for Dolph.
Yeah.
And I was all for it. I said, none of
that. Yeah, really?
Great. No, I was all for it. Are you kidding me? I was so for you doing it. That's where I was.
You
like,
you didn't really know anything about me at the time, right? I mean, maybe you could have seen me in special quarters, but
dude, Isaac showed me the military thing that you guys had shot.
Yeah.
Come on, man. I saw all of that. So the way this guy moves, if we can, you know, make, you know, because I knew that there's a way where we can shoot it, and you couldn't tell the size difference. And that's the thing. The talent, the move, and personally, there was something that really that was on my heart early on. You know, when I did the movie with Jean-Claude.
Universal Soldier.
Yeah, Universal Soldier, too.
Yeah.
My heart was broken a bit. I did a lot that Jean-Claude had cut out. Okay. I was happy because I'd done the first, like, that I've seen, pure 720 on camera.
Really?
Just from stance, boom, boom, bam, right? And, you know, he ended up leaving the other kick and a few other things in. But it was a fight, man. I was like, wait a minute, man. You win at the end of this movie. It makes you look better. And so I just remember that kind of thing happening. And I was like, I would never do that to anyone else. I'm gonna support. I remember how that was to me. And when I saw, that's why I was like, oh, you know, the duck under the, you know, the Guyver kick. Absolutely.
Yeah.
You
man.
Know what I mean?
Not only that, do everything that I wanted to do. There was never any issue.
Yes, absolutely. But not only that, but you know, what my fight was with Isaac, Boaz, and everybody? You know what my fight was? They wanted me to be a martial artist in the movie.
Right.
And I'm like, no, I fought hard. That I said, no, I want to play a boxer who has to be humble and learn a little bit of MMA to overcome this fighter.
Yeah.
If I'm jumping around doing something similar as a larger guy, where is my arc as a character? But so I wanted you to be absolutely dominant in that because of the storytelling.
This sequence here, I mean, this little sequence now, and I'm on the receiving end, but it's one of my favorite ever sequences. This is great. Mm. You've got to be precise with those punches.
Yeah.
And I had like blood in my mouth and I was letting bits of blood out at different times and then trying to get my gum shield to come out at the right time.
That was perfect. I mean, that doesn't happen very often. Man.
No.
And that sequence I was practicing that sequence before we even shot the movie. I know I'd seen something where an actual boxer uppercuts the guy, he falls, and he scoots his feet out at the last minute. Yeah. Yeah, so I had those ideas even before we even started shooting.
This was the film for me where I blew up, you know. Well, I don't know about an overnight success, but after that film came out, I started to see people really appreciating what I did in that and believing that guy was a real guy, and me not looking like Boyka at all was a little bit odd. But
you know, that's such a blessing because, bruh, if you look like the character all the time, you'd be branded with it.
For me, it is a bit frustrating because, yes, I'm very proud that as an actor, I succeeded in creating a character completely different from myself.
Right.
And that character was very engaging and all the rest of it. But on the flip side, you know, still to this day, people are almost upset when they see the real me because Boyka left such an impression on them.
Right, yeah.
Like, man, I think you should just be Boyka in real life. Why have you got your hair like that? Why do you look like a patsy? Come on, shave the sides off, get the goatees. Mate, you know.
But think about if you always look like Boyka and then you're trying to play another character.
Maybe I should have just always played Boyka.
Well, you have a character that all you got to do is put, and what comes with it is a whole lot of, you know, a lot of fan base with it. But I feel
I was never in this for the fame or anything like that. I was in it because I had a genuine love for it and I had to do it with, you know, in my soul. It was there. However,
the character you did in Avengement, that character, I want to see that character again, period. That was a badass character. You know,
that's the one and done. That's the one and done. But feel like a character actor in many ways.
Yeah.
Because I have had success almost when I get away from myself. I've seemed to have the most success.
Right.
So it's a strange thing, really. Because, you know, obviously we know that there's big movie stars out there that are famous and people want to see them be them. You know.
Yeah. Yeah. It's an interesting several sided coin because I run into that myself to some degree. If you line up everything I've done, right, which it's weird to know that I've done more comedy than anything else. It's kind of strange because the fact is, if you do something exciting like kick people in the face, that the people want to define you by that. But you have to keep breaking your own mold. The problem with that is that people are used to pigeonholing you. Almost everybody in Hollywood benefits from being pigeonholed because they own that little part, that little prime real estate. But it kind of makes them have a shelf life. What we can do, we can do comedies, we could do dramas. You've made your living as an actor as well. I make my living doing things that completely has nothing to do with action as well. So people, you know, like say I'm, you know, doing like, you know, Why Did I Get Married? My task is to make people forget I'm the guy that kicks people in the head sometimes. Yeah. And so I have a certain window of opportunity to make you forget that. And therefore I'm doing, you know, there's this world over here that knows me and there's a world over here that knows me. So the benefit is that we get to stay on the cruise a lot longer than people that you go, okay, that's just what he is. Not to say anything disparaging against these people, but like, you know, a lot of the action guys, you don't see them in any other thing. You know, I mean, you know, you're in Zero Dark 30. You don't see that.
We started with, to be honest, I don't know. I don't know exactly what your first work was, whether it was a martial arts thing or whether it was straight drama. For me, my very first film was a Hong Kong martial arts film, and my very next job was a British soap opera.
Right.
You know, so from the very get go, I was doing both sides of, you know, the spectrum of filmmaking.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's what we're going to continue. You know, hopefully, like for me, I always want to fuse those things together. And you know, my goal is, even when the action stuff, I wanted to feel closer to reality than anything else. That's personally like where I try to go to fuse those worlds. And who better to do it than somebody who's in those different worlds? That's why I'm doing a lot more directing, producing, acting, and writing.
Let's have a look at this then, Mike, because obviously I think this is the second film you directed. You directed Never Back Down 2 and Never Back Down 3, which is this one.
Mm-hmm.
And I love what you do here, the way you show how the traditional karate techniques are going to work in this MMA setting. And it was a great way directorially to show how you're going to implement the techniques. And that's a nice little move there.
Yeah. Again, this is something that I conceived way before the movie was done. I mean, I wrote the movie as well, you know, wrote, directed, acted in it. So there are certain techniques that, because I'm I train with MMA guys, and I fight. So I pulled out certain techniques that you're going to see in MMA fights all the time that are part of bunkai, of traditional forms. Bunkai means the practical applications. So since this movie, I've seen several people do this kind of on YouTube, pull out actual things that you see in MMA that relate to kata. So as a ambassador for traditional martial arts and fighting as the art form and application, I wanted to fuse these worlds together. These days, people are always in this combative thing of how different we are and drawing sides, where I'm trying to say, look how similar we are. If you look at the similarities and respect, just respect where people are coming from, you can gain a lot. So yeah, people, oh yeah, traditional martial arts, does that work? Yeah, it freaking works. Mm-hmm. Not only does it freaking work in fighting, but it works in life, man. You know, as we're showing, when you have discipline, that's the cornerstone of anything. Any success is discipline.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, just, but everybody always wants to look at the negative right away. Oh, that doesn't look. I mean, yeah, I practice kung fu. Yeah, you can't use that in a fight. But guess what? If I can make my body do that, you know, if I can make my body do what my mind tells it to, if I have that ability, well, if I apply that to fighting, how am I not a better fighter? When I can tell myself to, okay, if I want to kick you in your left eyebrow, I can do it because of this mind-muscle connection that I got through doing kung fu, doing these things where I can move the center of my body, which has all my power. So yeah, that little element that you learn in Wing Chun, that when you apply it to actual fighting, you're a better fighter instead of just discarding the whole thing.
This is it. And people get into martial arts for different reasons. You got people that get into it because they want to fight and whatever. And you get people that get into it because they want to get fit. And they want to do something that they enjoy to do. And they don't want to go jogging because they're bored. They want to do some martial arts because it helps them to keep getting through the door of the gym. And then you got, you know, you got your trickers and you got your gymnastic side of it. And you got, you know, various other things.
I respect all of it. It all is like, if there's anything that about martial arts, it's about respect. It's about humility. It's about, you know, that's like where that's that
the
goes.
Main thing it should teach you if you've where got the right instructor.
Where did that go? It drives me crazy. As a martial artist, I'm a martial artist not because I can beat up people.
Who the hell is interrupting my kung fu?
So, Mike, one of the fights that I know that you really appreciate is Bruce Lee's Way of the Dragon, the fight with Chuck Norris. And Mr. Bruce Lee, why do you like that fight so much? What is it about that?
Yeah, I always say the Way of the Dragon with Lee versus Norris is the best fight scene ever. I think the best fight scenes tell a story in the fight.
Yeah.
Well, there's so much honor that goes between those two people that it just amps up the whole martial artist quotient. The fact that, you know, Bruce Lee, you know, has to adapt. Something's not working. Now he gets on his toes and he's lighter and faster. Then Chuck Norris has to adapt because now he's going, okay, this guy's getting me because he's lighter, you know, and he tries it, but he's not as good at it.
Yeah.
And then he's defeated, but decides that, look, I don't want to go on. I'm going to go out on my shield. Bruce Lee's like, I don't want to do this, man. But as another, you know, honorable martial artist, if, you know, you want to go out like that, you know, I'm conflicted, but, you know, here you go. I'm honoring you. That being that is the most narrative that I've ever seen in a fight. On top of, they picked probably the greatest spot to do it.
Oh, yeah. The Colosseum.
Traditionally. You know, at that place, that's the site of battle, you know, for the world, Like, how do you beat that? That's just it just raised everything to such a level that it's like that's it's hard to, when you look at the whole scope of that fight, it's number one on my list and nothing could touch it because of those reasons.
What I love about Bruce Lee, and you do this yourself in many of your fight scenes, but not a lot of people do this, but what's great about Bruce is that he will tell the story during the fight of how he's going to outsmart his opponent. You know, you can see him fainting or showing a move a couple of times, and then, you know, Chuck Norris thinks he's going to do the move again and he does something else. And you can see him outsmart his opponent in many of his fights. And that's something that you put into your fight sequences as well.
I try to, because to me, it's the easiest way to work. Just like with acting. If somebody responds a certain way, that's going to inform my response to that person's response, right? I want to respond honestly. So there's sometimes with choreographers, they just think choreography first. They're not thinking about character.
Yeah.
I feel like some of the greatest fights are because of character. Ali versus Frazier. There are two characters. And so if not for the characters, it's not nearly as interesting. With our fight in Undisputed, those are two characters. I had to show in my character being humbled, learning. And with your character, you ultimately want to be the best fighter. And so there is a certain respect that you know we have for even though that we're on opposing sides. That makes it far more interesting. And so, you know, us behaving true to the character makes the fight come alive. You know what I mean?
Can I just say, though, there's a bit in that fight.
Yeah.
You properly kick him in the face, right?
No.
It looks like you kicked him right in the chin.
Oh, you're talking about the spinning one?
You do a back kick, right?
Yeah. It really looked like I kicked him in the face. No.
It really does.
No, you would have known if I kicked him in the face.
But I thought it was his double anyway.
No. I never kicked him.
Accidents happen.
Yeah,
I mean they do. That's the business we're in. We're trying.
Yeah, unfortunately, like, my legs are really long, and I had to come from a punch, and so I cheated my, because you know I would just pull my hip in to make sure I'm not hitting him. So I always have to kind of do this because I'm a little weird. My legs are really long.
Yeah, they are.
I got a short torso. And so
I remember trying to get out the way of them on accident, man. Michael Jai White, thanks so much, mate.
Thanks, bro.